And now, a bit of romance.
Two girls on a quest to find which rom-com is the best. P.S. I love rom-coms.
I love rom-coms.
Hello, and welcome to P.S. I Love Rom-Coms, the podcast about cute people meeting, jobs that are depleting, and most importantly, Diane Keaton. We're your hosts. I'm Allie.
And I'm Mia. P.S. I Love Rom-Coms is a podcast where Allie and I come to you each week with breaking news about which rom-com is the best rom-com of all time.
Joining us today is an incredible comedian and actress. And if she was in a rom-com, she'd be an up-and-coming stand-up who meets a guy who seems too good to be true on an airplane. He's a Yale graduate who manages a hedge fund, but she soon realizes that he's too good to be true. You guys, it's the one and only Sarah Kasrovi.
Oh my God, that was so, honestly, if that panned out from my life, I would be happy, even if he had a very dark secret.
That was the plot of the rom-com Good on Paper, which is a new Netflix rom-com starring Eliza
Schlesinger.
Wait, what? Is it good to be true, though?
It is true. It is. She wrote it based on something that happened to her.
Yeah, where this guy kind of just lied about everything. He lied about having a job and his degree, and then she found out he was kind of like personality catfishing her.
Oh my gosh, that would happen to me. It would.
That's so interesting. I know. I'm like very not naive, but I like take people's word at face value for too long, and then I'm like, oh no, I should have used my own judgment.
Yeah, I'm the same. Because we believe the best in people. But also, you don't believe like someone who's like, I went to Yale and manage a hedge fund would be lying, because like, sort of, what a boring lie. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And they met like in first class. So I think it's also on a plane. So I think that's also a good cloaking situation.
Yeah, exactly. That's very smart.
Well, and speaking of who you might be in a rom-com, Sarah, we like to start off each episode with a little segment called Which Rom-Com Hero or Heroine Are You Channeling? Where we equate the experiences we've had this week with the famous rom-com hero or heroine. Okay, I'll kick us off. Okay, this week I'm channeling Charlie from So I Married an Axe Murderer. Because he's very stressed out and sort of like paranoid, and I'm very stressed out because I've sort of been bouncing between Portland and L.A. for the last year, and now I'm officially about to like move all my belongings back to LA, and it's been a long time because of COVID. Everything's very stressful, so I'm just like kind of stressing, and I also have I'm sort of like casually seeing someone in Portland, and that is sort of like coming to an end because I'm moving cities, but I sort of like keep coming back to this one fact where I'm just like, it just could never work, and it's because we have such different sleep schedules, and Charlie is like always like making up like very like silly like small reasons like why his relationships can't work, and it's like this person like sleeps like 8 p.m. to 4 a.m. and I'm just like yeah that no, it just like sort of could never work because of our sleep schedules. And then I was like reflecting on it, and I was like, oh, a previous relationship of mine, I was like, it just can't work because they like go to bed too late. And I'm just like, what's going on with me that I am like sort of hyper focused on this like bedtime situation? And I'm like, I guess I just like need somebody that like goes to bed the same time as me. But that seems crazy.
I'm sorry, but it is.
Is it right? I can't tell if I'm being Charlie or, you know, if that is like a normal sort of like
I think it's normal. I one time was seeing somebody who worked on the weekends, but I was working during the week. And so on the weekend, when I wanted to do fun stuff, they were working. And then during the week, when they wanted to do fun stuff, I was working. And I was like, it's not going to work. The schedules are too different.
It's just like logistics is a real thing. I was seeing somebody who like didn't want to use any sort of like blackout curtain. I was fucking pissed. I'm like, well, the sun wakes me up at the ass crack of dawn every single time in your room. And he was like, I love waking up when like humans are supposed to wake up in the old ages, and went on this like big spiel about how like that's why roosters and the sun are supposed to wake us up. And I'm like, I go to bed at like 12:30. I don't do that. You know what I mean?
Yes. We're on the same circadian rhythm, Sarah.
Oh my God, you too? 12:30, what time do you wake up?
Exactly. I'm like a 12:30 to 10 person.
I love that about you.
We
Oh my god, we've been together one day. That's great.
Yes, that's right. Well, we obviously our circadian rhythms lined up. Okay, that makes me feel better. But yeah,
no, but Allie's earlier though. Allie, you wake up at like 7, right?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, Allie's your sleep schedule is like incredible. You're always the bionic woman. I'll have just woken up and Allie's like, oh, I went to an event with my friend and I ran a marathon with my mom and now I'm here to play Dungeons and Dragons. And I'm like, how? How did you do all that today while I was asleep?
Thank you for thinking that of me. There was a period of time where I was running like half marathons and 10Ks with my mom in the morning, but we don't do that anymore because of the pandemic.
That's who I'm channeling. Allie, who are you channeling?
Oh man. Okay. So I think I'm doing a bit of a cop out this week, but it fits, so I'm gonna do it. I think this week I'm channeling Becky Fuller, okay, from Morning Glory, played by Rachel McAdams, just because in Morning Glory, Becky has this issue where she tends to just ramble a lot on dates and just kind of talks and doesn't like, you know, she has trouble like shutting up or just like being a little bit self-aware that the other person isn't, that she's like dominating the conversation. And I'm channeling her because recently I got set up. I was like, a friend of mine set me up with one of his friends for like a date, which was very fun. I love getting set up.
Oh my gosh.
Please, anyone who's listening, set me up. single, looking to mingle. And the setup was with this really lovely guy. And I was like very excited, but like nervous. And on the date, I don't know what was happening. I was nervous. And like, I think also that whole week, I just been alone working, like working from home. And I didn't talk to anybody for a really long time. And so on the date, I kind of just like went on this rant about how much I hate magicians. And I just like could not stop talking magicians and just saying how like magicians are sexist and the whole like, why don't we ever see women magicians? And you guys for so long. And then I think so, it was just like, even like the format of like magic shows are sexist because women are doing all the work, but they're just usually dressed in objectifying costumes while men get all the glory. And I just, what I'm doing right now. And I just couldn't shut up. And then after the rant, he was finally like, I actually like magicians and magic. And I was like, cool. Cool.
Oh my God.
Awesome.
Talked to him since?
Yeah, but not. It was like, he sent me a text like a week after our date being like, hey, sorry I didn't text you right away. Like, had fun hanging out. And I was like, awesome, me too. He was in a band. And I was like, I'd love to come see your band sometime. And then he's like, yeah.
Oh, it's over.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I guess you're right. Sorry. I was like, no, he wants you to come see his band. And I was like, oh, okay, sure. There's no like
the magicians really did him.
I think he probably like, I don't know. Just I should have had a little bit more self-awareness. I read an article about like how to improve your small talk. And so it was in the New York Times. So I'm really gonna be utilizing those skills going forward. And
I think if a difference of opinions about magicians can sort of bring down a relationship, it wasn't gonna make it through a lot of the hard stuff.
Yeah.
And I will say I've never thought hard about it, but hearing your argument, Allie, I'm like, wow, the magician situation is very sexist.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's actually, wow, that makes a lot of sense. And what a weird hill to die on. I actually like magicians.
I think at one point in the conversation, I was like, name 5 female magicians. That's who I'm channeling this week. Sarah, who are you channeling?
Oh, guys, this was a difficult assignment for me. because I kept finding myself channeling like the like sort of villains and you know, like side characters in like dramas and horror movies, and I was like, no, I need to find sort of a heroine of a rom-com that I'm channeling. And so, you know, I really gave it a think, and I would say for me this week, I feel most connected to Tula Portocalos from My Big Fat Greek Wedding. I don't know if you guys know about Tula. I'm sure you do. Let me tell you a thing or two about Tula. Okay, good. I'm talking to Tula heads. Great. Yeah, she just like really is like kind of like a mess and a little bit spastic and sort of you know, came from a very similar lifestyle that I came from in terms of like, you know, growing up as a first generation kid here, and then, you know, kind of confronting this push and pull of you know, trying to please her Greek roots while also I don't know, having anybody notice her that she liked. And so I would say that like for me this week, it's a lot of like I've gotten a couple of like because I actually don't know if everybody shares the sentiment, but I think probably 10 people I know have gotten engaged in the last 2 weeks or married.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's this season, right?
Yeah.
It's everyone's married. I was like, how did this happen? Because time is like, I've been a vacuum. So all of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh. Yes, I agree.
Yeah. It's like too many though, I would say. I mean, I was happy for like the first few and now I'm like, we'll just take a break maybe. yeah, she, you know, I can relate kind of to the sort of the approach. Depression, I would say, that she feels from, you know, her family and friends of like, when's it happening for you? I get a lot, I've been getting a lot of that weirdly this week with every piece of news. It's felt like, you know, some family member or, close friend will be like, any updates from your side? Or like, when's it? Oh my God, that's so crazy that they got engaged. Like, have you met anyone? And I think that is, yeah, has been, it's probably happened honestly this week, like every other day, I would say.
Oh,
and
no.
It was really bad. And yesterday I had to cut the conversation off midway and just be like, and I think we can't have it. I think we have to stop this. the answer remains the same. I think it's funny because in I feel that in like Eastern, like, you know, I guess she's Greek, but like with Middle Eastern culture, similarly, it's like you can't date until you're 21, and then if you're not married by 23, something has happened to you. You've got 2 years to like, and if that, it's like a year and a half to really to have your first date and also be proposed to. You know, we're way past the prime over here, and I feel like Tula and I really really both could sort of share the nothing kind of, you know, the stressors of that. But, you know, maybe we'll find, we'll each find our own John Corbett, and, or she did, I guess, but, you know, I'm waiting here, guys, to see kind of when I have an update. I'm excited for the day that, someone says, how about you? And I go, well, let me sit you down. This is what's going on with me. And it's good. It's exciting. but you know, yeah, I guess that would be who my girl is this week. There is a My Big Fat Greek Wedding too, which I haven't watched. So I'm very curious, like, what happens to her? And if she stays happy, you know?
Oh.
I'm going to check that out this week. So I can just see if I, like,
she actually goes through a painful divorce.
Does she actually?
No.
But in real life, she does, right? Like the guy that she wrote the movie about is not her current husband.
Oh yeah, that did happen.
She does go through a divorce in real life, but not in. I'm looking at, actually, she got divorced in 2018. I just looked it up.
Wait, again? No, which is fine. You're absolutely allowed to. second divorce or first divorce?
She 1993 to 2018. Ian Gomez.
Oh my God, Ian! I mean, it's Ian from the movie.
Yeah. Okay, Ian. She used his literal name, which is actually kind of crazy, right?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. So that's like a good chunk of time. That's like almost 30
years. Yeah, enough to have a kid, be like, why did I do this? And then move on.
Yeah. I feel like it's so relatable. And I also feel like it's one of those questions where it's like, you wouldn't be concerned about it at all. It's like when someone asks you if you're okay and you're like, I thought I was. Why? You're like, wait, what? Am I okay? So I feel like you're like, yeah, I'm just thinking about my life. People are like, are you married yet? And you're like, no, why?
Well, yeah, exactly. You don't think about it until you're asked. And then as soon as you're asked, you're like, oh my God, I feel horrible about myself. Actually, you were so correct.
Yeah, you just get like, if you get trapped in sort of like a situation where a bunch of people have that expectation, it's like a very like stressful place for your psyche. But then you go back to Los Angeles where people are not, no one's asking you.
Exactly. And then you're like, I'm home amongst my people.
You go, oh my gosh.
I will say there was a close contender for second, but we don't have to talk about it because I know we have to sort of get into Morning Glory.
Do tell.
It's a little bit more fun because that was sort of like, oh my God, it's so sad. Everyone's asking me if I'm married and I'm not. I'm so sad. But here is one that's kind of fun and also still sad, which is Prime. You know Uma Thurman in Prime?
Yes.
I actually just realized that was a movie because I have been trying to date my therapist's son. he lives super close to me and he's so cute. And like, she, I think, is afraid of me. I like was jokingly being like, oh my God, it's so funny. Like, you remember how you mentioned, because we like spend like a weird amount of time talking about her son that like I started to get in my head that like she's trying to set him up with me, which like she's absolutely not. She's just trying to talk. And so I was like telling one of my friends, like, hey guys, like, oh my God, how crazy would it be if I accidentally like started dating my therapist's son? And my friend was like, oh my God, that's the plot of this movie Prime, which I hadn't seen actually. And then I told my therapist that, like, thinking it would be funny. And she laughed a little bit because I think she, like, knows that I need that, you know? But then after that, she was, like kind of had a serious conversation with me where she goes, my son is 20. and I don't think you should think about him anymore. And I was like,
oh my God.
I mean, she was like, not trying to be mean. She was like, I'm so happy for you. Like, she's like, I think that's really fun. I think you'd be such a fun daughter-in-law for someone who has a son that like can legally, you know, go to a bar or something. But he's not ready. And I was like, I'm not going to like go look for him. You know what I mean?
Oh my God.
I think she like started to get, I think it was about like two or three sessions where we had been talking about him casually in a joking way. And the third session, she really put me in my place and was like, it's not happening. Okay.
It's never going to happen. Oh my gosh. Wow. That is wild.
I know.
Are you and your therapist going to make it through, do you think?
Yeah. Are you going to break up with her after that? Or are you going to respect that she set a really like unnecessary boundary? Right,
exactly. Like, I don't know where he lives. I was trying to find out, but I was a little like, at first I was like kind of miffed, mostly because I was like, who cares that he's 20? But then I was like, no, you know what? Like, it was like in good fun, but you know when someone like says something in good fun, but there's truth, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was sort of stern. Like, yeah.
Ouch. Oh, God.
No, I think she wants both my and her child's best interest at heart. So that's not happening. Yeah. So there we go. Okay. Those are my characters, guys.
Okay.
Oh, excellent channels.
And speaking of dreams that people in your life are like, not going to happen, let's get into our movie discussion, shall we?
Yes.
Does that work? Sorry, is that too? I know that wasn't a dream for you.
It was.
It was. Okay, great. Fantastic. Well, today we watch the 2010 rom-com Morning Glory. In this film, Becky Fuller, played by Rachel McAdams, is newly hired as a producer on a national morning news program called Daybreak. She revitalizes the low-rated show by bringing in legendary anchorman Mike Pomeroy, played by Harrison Ford. Pomeroy, however, refuses to do puff pieces like celebrity gossip and fashion and clashes with his co-host, played by Diane Keaton. Meanwhile, Becky's romance with a colleague, played by Patrick Wilson, begins to unravel, leaving her struggling to save her relationship, her job, and the show.
Morning Glory was written by rom-com legend Eileen Broche McKenna.
Oh my gosh.
Right? And was directed by, I'll say probably one of Mia's favorite directors, Roger Mitchell, who,
directed
Notting Hill and Mia, 1995 Persuasion.
Stop! Stop! Yep. No! Yep. Mm-hmm. Oh my god, I didn't. I went to his IMDb, but I didn't see that. Are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. Are you kidding me? What?
Yep.
Wow.
It was one of the first films that he's directed.
I love, Sarah, you know what's about me? I love the 1995 research.
I'm so happy to be a part of like your favorite director's work viewing experience. This is amazing.
I can't believe somebody could have directed all three. I can't believe the same person could direct those three films. Wow. That is wild.
So you guys, what are some of our first initial thoughts on Morning Glory? And Sarah, would you mind telling us a little bit about your history with rom-coms?
Oh, yes, sure. Yeah, I would say love them. Who doesn't? Yeah, I feel, I mean, I don't know. I'm curious. Does everyone come on here, or am I unique to say I've been watching rom-coms was the first genre of film that I ever like watched and gravitated towards? Because I think that like I've always had an interest in comedy since a young kid, being a young human, and I wasn't allowed to watch like true comedies like. I don't know why the first thing that came to my head was Rush Hour, but like of that era, you know, like I wasn't like he swore and it was like, what are they even teaching you? There's drugs. But like somehow if it was a rom-com, if there was like sort of like romance and love, and really if there was an end in marriage, I was really encouraged to sort of digest such content. And by that, I mean, I wasn't restricted from it. So I would say like rom-coms were really what I watched the most. Like my cousins and I would watch Bridget Jones's Diary every Christmas. Really crazy so choice for being like eight, but it was fun. and you know, Love Actually, et cetera. So I would say like my exposure and history with them is that they hold a place in the heart from a young age. And like most of the DVDs I have in my childhood bedroom, I think are pretty much all rom-coms. I recently went to clean it out, and I have Made in Manhattan on DVD. Yes. So many good ones of that era. I would say like they feel very nostalgic, you know, to me for that reason. And I think I've grown up and now I I feel that I spend most of my time watching like killing movies, like thrillers and like heists. So it was really nice to like have an assignment to watch a rom-com, and like it felt very warm, you know. It was good.
It's a genre that has like massive bumpers for like what you can expect sort of like emotionally to feel.
Exactly.
Oh, and I love it so much.
It is. And like there was moments in Morning Glory, and not to like jump too ahead to talk about it, but like there were moments in it where I was like, oh, everything feels good to be true. But because I know this is a genre, and because I know this is a rom-com, and because I know it's adhering to the formulaic, you know, milestones of the genre, I know that in like about 5 minutes, there will be a problem, you know,
exactly.
And it happened before my eyes. And I was so pleased.
Oh my gosh. And had you seen Morning Glory before? What's your relationship to Morning Glory like?
No, I had never seen it. I knew that there was like some sort of, I knew it had something to do with news, but honestly, like I had never, it had not popped up much in my life. So when that, you know, when we discussed watching that, I was really excited to add something new to the repertoire. And I have so many thoughts on it. It's crazy.
Oh my gosh. Same. I had never seen it before this viewing. Somehow, I don't know why. Looking at the movie poster, like I remember the movie poster was like Rachel McAdams like kicking up her heel, right?
Yeah.
Back in the day. And I was always just like, that feels against type for her. And I just like didn't want to see it. And I don't know why. But so this is my first time. Allie, have you seen it before?
I have seen it before. I watched it in college during my like big rom-com binge phase.
Yes.
Because I just love Rachel McAdams and I just love Harrison Ford and Diane Keaton. And I was like, and I love women that are like stressed out. I just like really, I love them and I honor them. And so I just loved, like, I watched like the trailer for it and just seeing her like always blowing her bangs out of her eyes. I was like, okay, I'm in. A woman fussing with her bangs? I'm in.
is true. That is like a huge part of that movie.
Yeah, it's her touching her bangs.
Yes, the bangs were distracting. I was like, I don't buy that those bangs are real. I was like, after like three quarters of the way through, I was like, I think those are clip-ins maybe because they are getting, but you know what? Then by the end, I thought they were, but then by the end, the side bangs were very convincing. Mm-hmm. So then I thought maybe real hair.
Did you notice the side bangs obviously came with sort of her character arc? Like,
yeah, there was definitely a hair arc with her.
Yeah, exactly.
And you love to see it. You know, we see this in films such as When Harry Met Sally, Always Be My Maybe.
Miss Congeniality.
Miss Congeniality. Yeah. Sometimes your hair has an arc and it's interesting. And, it's, and you do love to see it, especially in such like a sort of like, just like a very clear crystal picture of what was happening in America in 2010 to all of our bangs. And like, just like this, that strong choice that looking back on, it's like we all look like the lead singer of Fall Out Boy, Pete Wentz.
Can
I don't know.
You imagine that there will be a whole generation of women who will maybe never have bangs? Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel who went through the 90s, like all of us, I'm sure at some point in our childhood had bangs, but I feel like babies now can just miss that phase. It's crazy.
Oh yeah, agree. Or they go straight to like chic micro bangs and only the ones who like really
yeah,
know
that's
what
so
doing.
True. Yeah.
Yeah, which is not, I would say probably not anyone at this table, but that's okay. That's okay. They're not for me. What do we think? What's our initial vibe on Morning Glory?
Who wants to go? Do you guys want me to stay?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
you so, yes. Yeah, pop in first, Sarah.
Oh god. Okay. I don't know, guys. I mean, I'd love to chat because here's the thing. I related a lot, Allie, to look, that's why I actually asked you about kind of the heroine assignment, is because I really did relate a lot to her sort of how would you even like she's manic almost, like she's just like so psychotic in her like social interactions, especially at the start and especially like the romantic ones. I can totally relate to that too, just like absolutely rambling, like unhinged when you like don't know what's happening is like my entire brand. So I really did feel for the girl, and you know, especially that first scene with the shirts where like she was really so prepared to celebrate her non-existent promotion.
Yeah.
The thing I liked about this rom-com, I haven't watched, like, you know, and I know I'm speaking to sort of the rom-com goddesses over here who I'm sure you guys like tropes like this are omnipresent in all the movies you've been watching, but it's been such a long time that I've watched that like classic rom-com that I like forgot how fucking cheesy the like the can we swear? I'm so sorry if you have to bleep that out. I don't know if you're charged by the network.
No.
So the like when she was wearing the shirt, I was just like, okay, it's so obviously she's gonna get fired, right? And like you don't see movies like that anymore where like it's just I just like loved the blatant, it like really left no room for guessing the whole time, you know.
Oh, I felt the same way. I'm so glad you said that because I forgot after like a certain point in the movie, I was like, all of these jokes, it's so interesting because you just like, you see them coming, like that when she wasn't wearing pants, but still wearing her shoes.
Exactly.
And I'm just like, she's going to walk out the door without pants. She's going to walk out the door. And like, and there it is. Okay. Come get your pants.
Exactly. And she'll come back for them and that'll be a laugh. Like,
yeah, this is like a very specific brand of rom-com. I would say it's sort of like easy drinking rom-com.
Exactly.
You know, kind of like what kind of beer should I have, like a Blue Moon, you know? It's like it's like a Blue Moon of rom-coms.
Yeah.
I'll be right back. So I'm just gonna open the door for my dog.
It's familiar, it's not challenging. It's written by Eileen Broch McKenna, and she's kind of like a little trope queen in that she just like really sticks to like tropes and typical rom-com structures in her films, I feel like, because I think about 27 Dresses and like so much of that movie is like just full of tropes. Like there's the same trope in each one, which is like woman is offered, you know, her dream promotion or her dream job and she turns it down. You know, I love tropes like that. But what's different about this rom-com and what I kind of like is like it it also focuses kind of on like the friendship between between Becky and Becky Fuller and Mike Pomeroy, Harrison Ford's character, where it's like a woman is trying to get like respect from her idol and like do a good job. And the story kind of like focuses on that friendship, I would say, maybe even more than the like romantic element of the film.
Yeah.
And I wonder, like, the romantic element of the film is just almost like the B story of the movie. And I wonder if at one point it had a larger chunk of the movie, but then when Harrison Ford, you know, A-lister, you know, cinema icon Harrison Ford got cast in the role of Mike Pomeroy, I wonder if the focus of the film shifted so he got more screen time, kind of a thing. And then they just cut, you know, Patrick Wilson's part too.
That's actually so true, because like now that you think about it, like it's like the B story or the romance story actually didn't really see that much conflict. It was literally her just one time being like, I can't, like, I just like have to focus on work. And like about 15 minutes later coming back and being, I'm kidding, I like you. And then it was like, that was it. Like there was never a time. Like I actually was expecting him. So contrary to what I said before of like everything that I expected came to fruition, I was expecting him to like have an episode about like, you just care so much about your work, I can't do this with you.
Right.
And like her have to come groveling back. But she was so busy, like you said, with Harrison Ford's issues that like there was no space for them to have like very dramatic conflict. I feel like he was just kind of dependably there.
Right. That was a way definitely diverted from like typical rom-coms in that, or it just like reminds me, I don't know. It would that be more sort of like on brand for like Hallmark, like Lifetime type of rom-coms? I don't know. Where I was like, wow, there is like very, I am not stressed at all for the romantic relationship.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like, I trust that will be fine. I'm like, I'm stressed for the state of news, but
yeah,
not.
Exactly. Me too.
But I'm like, this all seems like it's going to be fine. Or I was like, maybe this guy will turn out to be an asshole and there's like a better sort of quirkier guy. And it's like, nope.
It's just a yellow-goer. No, but it actually is interesting though. If we really want to get like metaphorical, because like her like love was for her job. So in a way there was like the rom-com tropes as applied to like work and news.
My God.
Yeah,
the morning show is the morning. Wow. The Today Show is good on paper guy. Wow.
Yes.
Exactly.
Wow. Yes. Sarah, exactly. You cracked it wide open.
And then it started with like a breakup with her old news station.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
And not, like, you think they're going to propose, but they dump you.
But they dump
you.
Oh my God, Sarah.
You're the host now.
You're the host now.
Thank you so much. I'm writing The New Yorker right now. I cracked Morning Glory.
Oh my gosh. Okay, well, that changes everything,
right.
I think. Now that we know that this is a rom-com where the romantic lead is sort of the big journalism job. And she sort of like has an idea of what she wants the job to be, which is the Today Show. And then she works so hard trying to get to that job. And then in the end, she's offered it. And like every sort of rom-com, when you're offered good on paper guy, you realize you want sort of like your quirky, like grittier love interest. Wow.
Exactly. Wow. That you worked so hard to like build trust and love and communication and family with, you know?
Wow.
We did it, guys.
Wow. Oh my gosh. And ultimately, right, it's this really helps me shine a light. Because at one point I was like, she should go to the Today Show.
The Today Show is her family that she built from the ground up.
And I think I was wrong. Because I think like a defining moment for her character that we don't see a lot of these moments, but where I was like, because in the beginning, I was sort of like, I don't know. I was waiting for this moment. And when it came, I was like, oh, hell yes. Is when she's at like that first morning meeting at Daybreak. And it's like, oh, she's overwhelmed. And there's so much going on. And you're like, can she do it? And all of a sudden she's like, do this, do this, do this. And oh, by the way, pervy guy, Paul, you're fired. And I was just like, yes, she is a badass.
Yeah, I loved that. Also, it was so crazy that he's Phil Dunphy from Modern Family. I was like looking at him for so long being like, is that Ty Burrell?
Yeah, Yes. Oh my gosh. I know his name, but I can only ever, I like can only think of him as Phil Dunphy. Like his actor.
I'm really like, crazy.
That actor's name is Phil Dunphy.
Also though, don't you feel like there were so many moments like that moment that you described was really empowering and also like one of those where it's like, okay, yeah, we kind of were hoping that that was coming. And then like, yeah. There were other like I felt like, where she's like, Diane Keaton's like, I'm sorry, I heard what you tried to do. I heard you tried to get Harrison Ford's character. What is his name again? The guy?
Mike Pomeroy.
I heard you try to get Mike Pomeroy, like respect to you, sister, but like never gonna happen. And then immediately, oh my God, who's that behind you? Or like when they're talking about like the Yale, like, oh my God, that guy over there is so hot. He's perfect. His mom owns a Tupperware company and he wrote Yale. And she's like, who is it? And like dramatically flips her head around and it's obviously, like it's obviously the guy. Like it's just so, I loved those moments because I was like, thank you. Thank you for not like, you know, surprising me with an unfortunate, unexpected. It was just
right. That's so funny. I feel that way about the job where it's like, oh, you got fired from sort of this, like, it's like, oh, you got fired from this, like, sort of small news station, New Jersey. And it's like, okay, do you want to be in charge of one of the network shows?
Yeah,
it's
like, what? The executive producer on a network show.
I was like, yeah. What is happening? Yeah, the conflict is so chill in this movie.
That's exactly it. Like, Yeah, it is
it's
so
like
chill.
The calmest conflict.
Well, and the guy below her who was like, yeah, because she's trying to get a promotion. She's like a producer trying to get a promotion to senior producer. And then somehow she's, what is it called? Executive producer. And yeah. The guy below her, like they just dealt with that by like, she starts on her first day and he's like, oh yeah, I'm the senior producer. She's like, why didn't you ever try to go for executive? He's like, I didn't wanna.
Yeah, want the pay raise and the prestige.
Yeah, exactly.
Like no competition there. Nothing to stress about. Oh, and he's married and no flirtation at all. And you're just like, all right, very chill. Kind of falls asleep sometimes. Okay.
Right. Exactly. Oh my God. It was actually really lovely in that it like really didn't like force us to be that nervous throughout at all, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. No, I wasn't that anxious.
Yeah. I was like, this is like a very relaxed rom-com. I love the way it started on the date where it was like,
oh,
yeah. Did you guys' TVs have this? I was like, is this just me or is this how it was shot? Where it like sort of zooms in on the date shot?
Oh, yeah.
That was really cool.
About that start.
I thought that was like a beautiful opening that sort of was like maybe part of a separate movie. You know, like that's not sort of what the movie was like moving forward. But I loved it. I felt like I was sort of dropping into like a really intimate.
Wait, I literally forgot about that. I honestly thought my TV was broken for like the first 20 minutes. I kept like refreshing because I was like casting from like onto the TV from my computer, like doing an HDMI situation. And I was like, this always happens. Like, I refreshed it like 3 times. I was like, oh, it's meant to be like that. Oh, right. Okay.
No, I rewound it. I rewound it because I was like, this can't be right.
And yeah, exactly.
I just pulled my screen to be really, really big because it was so small.
That's hilarious. Oh, well, because like it's very like Truman Show vibes of like, yeah. Oh, right, we're watching a show of a show or something. And then suddenly, like you said, it was a really cool opener that had nothing to do with the rest of the movie.
Right. Totally, yeah. Completely separate from how the rest of the movie was. But
also,
I
love that like they didn't address, like I felt like there was some loose ends where like, okay, yes. Jimmy Carter was called a sex offender and then like,
oh my God.
They had this massive blow up fight, like their first big fight on air, and like the first time like Diane Keaton's character broke and was like, this is beneath you, and he was like, I get paid more than you, and it was just like, that was cool for ratings, like we're all happy like in real life. Yeah. Like, I feel like it would be this huge deal, and like, yeah, it was just not, it was very funny how like they didn't feel the need to tie that up at all.
It was so in the middle, you know, where it was like, I also feel like they weren't committing, where it was like, okay, so the thing is that they talk shit to each other on air and they're like, maybe for the second, but that's sort of going to go away.
Yeah.
And we're not really like going to follow up on that. And I was like, and then I Googled when Anchorman came out. Cause I was like, this feels sort of just like a loose, a little like steal, like an artist moment from Anchorman that like wasn't committed to. And Anchorman did come out first, which I'm not saying. I just was like, I was just like, man, that's like such a, I bumped on that as well.
Yeah,
I was like,
yeah.
It's so it odd feels, to include it. Yeah.
It feels kind of sitcom-y almost when it's like, when there's no consequences or like, you like see the big blow up, but then you never really see the consequences. The slate's just kind of wiped clean and it's like, okay, now the next thing, the next joke, which I love. I love not seeing the consequences. I love, you know, not having to see people punished for their mistakes.
None of that throughout. There was almost like zero consequences throughout.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think of any time there was like, again, like the guy just took her back and had nothing to say to her about like how she conducted herself or like work or anything.
Or even like, on the date when it's like she act, you know, when she's like, oh, this is interesting. She's getting in her own way. And he's like, did you get in your own way?
Yeah, right.
Like, yeah, I did. And you're like, what is happening?
Yeah, that was so, so weird. Oh, it was interesting.
I loved, this is just like, again, this feels kind of like sitcom-y, but I felt like Becky's character was always picking up folders or like picking up bags or like picking up big like hunks of food. And I just love that she's always walking and picking up folders. And I just, that's the kind of life that I want to live. I just want to be like storm through buildings and be like, I need this folder from this shelf. And I need this folder from this. And like this bag I need to pick up. And I need a huge slice of pizza. And I need to walk. I need to walk everywhere.
Yeah, you're just like, this is someone who knows where she's going and sort of the items that she needs, where it's like, you know, normally you're just like, what is all this shit? I need to
That is so true. I totally like she really was like doing that with having her BlackBerry to her ear, like the whole that also made me really miss like nostalgic for BlackBerries, that she like constantly had in the fridge.
Nice little rolly button.
Yeah, exactly. I missed the rolly button, BBM. Did have a lot of nostalgia packed in here. I also feel like they introduced characters that we never, ever cared about again, like the mom. When she came back in the end, like, crying when she, like, watched the frittata segment or whatever. Did you even recognize that that was her mom from the beginning?
Yeah, I did, but I was like, I also felt like jarred by it.
I was like, who is this lady? Oh, right. She was there for 1 minute in the beginning telling her that her life sucks.
Yeah. Her also, mom was also so comically mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Very mean. It was absurdly rude to be like, you're 28, which is very young. She's like,
which is very young.
Embarrassing. Yeah. She's like, now it's just embarrassing. I was like, oh my God.
And no mother would ever say your dreams are embarrassing, right?
Yeah. Or, well, maybe
maybe somewhat, but
like, yeah, I think it was funny. It was like so scripted. It was like this mom had written out the script to be like, yeah, it's just embarrassing. And I'm just trying to stop you before it becomes heartbreaking. Like, it was like, hey, you practice this lady.
Yeah, you practice in the mirror.
This movie feels sort of just like a tonal fight almost, where it's like there is this sort of like glossier, low conflict, like over dramatized tone coming through, and then there's like an undercurrent of like stuff that is like makes me do really connect with the characters, like that scene where she fires Paul, or even the fact that she like watches multiple news stations at 1 a.m. like there's something like really sweet and specific about that. And I'd be so interested to know like what happened, like how that came about, because I'm like, god, like different scenes feel like just completely different movies.
Totally.
Like that opening date scene and that scene with the mom have like are so different.
No, it's so true. Maybe it is like, it's interesting to think like the theory that Ali proposed of like the different iterations based on like what cast became attached to the movie, like how it changed.
That is such a good point. Yeah. Cause there is sort of like, it was almost as if there was like too big of actors for the roles.
Right. Right. Like, exactly.
Yeah. Like Diane Keaton feels like a little too big for her role. Harrison Ford feels like a little too big for his role.
Wait, also, is this like me being a conspiracy theorist / like shipping this love, but did the like last couple frames when, Harrison Ford goes to Diane Keaton's room where like he's like going there because it's like, oh great, like he's been humbled and like he went to a room even though like he was they asked him to go whatever before and he never did. So fine, at first I was like, okay, that's benign, but then he closes the door and I'm like, are they gonna hook up?
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, I would ship that too. I think that was I was waiting for that to happen the whole time.
Oh yeah, that's what I thought.
Okay, amazing.
Yeah, what I thought that One loose end, they also, like, they set up this whole thing where, like, Harrison Ford's character was an alcoholic who was estranged from his family. And I was like, oh, I can't wait for that scene where he gets reunited with his family.
Yeah, exactly.
And Rachel McAdams helps him reunite with his family. It did not come. That being said, I really thought that I liked Harrison Ford's performance in this. I thought he can do this thing that I don't think a lot of people can do super well, which is like he can somehow still be like lovable when he's like very, very angry. And like when he's angry, it's like I don't feel threatened at all. I'm like, oh,
not scared.
He's just like a little, he's just curmudgeon-y, you know?
Yeah, that's very true.
I so picked up on that too. And I think it's this thing he does with his voice where he's like, if you're like saying a mean line, you're like, he does this thing where he sort of like elongates it and it's like, I don't like this. And there's something about it that's like the fact that he drags it out.
You're like, he's kidding. I don't know.
Yeah, it almost sounds like a joke.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, but you're so right about like how he did have this whole moment like outside that governor's house where he's like, you know, my grandson, Alexander, like we learned the kid's name and like never referenced again. Like
what? That, like moments like when a moment like that happens in a film, I'm just like, what happened here?
Yeah,
exactly. There was a scene with the grandson. I feel like there had to be that they cut because it was time. We're just going to have him walk into the sunset. That's all we have time for.
Right. And that can sort of like be what happens when you like put a lot of ingredients in the soup, you know, when it comes to rom-coms, right? Where it's like, oh, it's a rom-com, but the love interest is journalism. But also the love interest is that blonde man. But also there is a relationship with her and hair and hair.
Yeah, exactly.
But also what about we get this guy with the curly hair to like laugh at people at one point where you just start like, it's like that character. You just like,
him. Was he a security guard?
I have no idea. Stood out so much. Was he just in one scene?
No, he was in multiple.
He was in two. He was in a couple.
Are you talking about the guy who was always eating a banana and like watching?
Yeah, right.
Like honestly, though, like this whole movie, watching this movie, being like, who would I want to play? It was either him or that super annoying lady who ran up to Harrison Ford in the park, being like, "Can we just take a picture? Can you sign my like face, like whatever?" And she called him. What did she call
Matt
him,
Lauer?
Dan? What was it?
Maybe it was Dan Rather or Matt
Dan Rather.
Lauer.
Yeah,
I can't remember. Yeah, I have face blindness for those two people.
I have face blindness for Felicity Huffman and this is really embarrassing. Felicity Huffman and Frances McDormand. I can't. The faces are the same.
Oh, I get that. I can see that.
Thank you.
There's something interesting. I feel like there's a William H. Macy thing happening here too. You know, where it's like William H. Macy is Felicity Huffman's husband. Him and Frances McDormand feel like they're in stuff together or just kind of look similar or something. Mm-hmm, like she kind of looks like a mix between the two. I don't know, but I do see that.
You're right. Yeah. That probably is part of the Venn diagram that throws it off. It's true. Face blindness is a real condition. So I can just.
I have it too. And I do think they're like mostly random. Like I talked about this last episode, so I feel bad about it. But it's minor John Cusack and John Travolta and then Matt Damon. And who's the other guy? Mark Wahlberg.
Cusack and John Travolta is.
I know. They look nothing alike.
Am I the name thing? Are you sure it's their face?
No, it's like, well, here's the
thing.
They're
not even in similar movies. They're in like very different movies.
Well, who's in Face Off? Is it because they're both in Face Off? Or who?
Keanu Reeves is in Face Off, right?
No, but that's so funny that you think that.
Isn't Nicolas Cage in Face Off?
Yeah, Nicolas Cage and Keanu Reeves are in Face Off.
Oh my, no.
John Travolta is in Face Off.
But see, that's what I'm saying. This whole group, there's a little bit of face blindness.
Yeah, it's like the blind, the face blind leading the face blind. Like, it's not good.
We're all being like, no. I do think it's all rooted in the movie Face Off. I can't believe I thought John Cusack was in that.
It's okay.
It's okay. Interesting. Well, anyways, okay, before we move on to the trope section, any final thoughts on Morning Glory?
I laughed out loud several times while watching this movie, just like by myself in my apartment, like, full belly laughed. where I went when that weatherman, all the stuff that Like, oh, there was this whole,
that was actually so fun.
There was this delightful whole bit with the weatherman where, like, Rachel McAdams' character is trying to get, like, the ratings up for the failing new show that she works for. And she's like, I know what I'll do. I'll put this weatherman on a roller coaster. And the ratings get really good. And then she just puts this weatherman in, like, horrible situations. Like, he's, like, in a, like, a Blue Angel plane and, like skydiving. And this guy just makes the funniest faces. And I just laugh so hard.
I truly actually thought that, like, there was going to be a big turn in this movie where that man was going to die on one of these things. He always looks like he's on his deathbed, like, because she's like has him hanging upside down. And then in one of the fucking conferences, she goes, remember when she goes, I think his name was Ernie, right?
Yeah.
Like, and Ernie's gonna get tar and feathered for next segment. I was like, did she just say he's gonna get tar and feathered?
Like, yeah.
What? The man was getting a tattoo on his ass on live TV. It was so sad.
I know. I thought she was going to have gone too far and then have to get back to her roots in journalism. And then they were like, no, she wins.
Ernie, like, really seemed to, like, be okay with it, which was shocking. I thought, like, he was going to have a moment where he stormed in and was like, I'm a person, you know?
But he didn't. Yeah, it was wild turns. Yeah. And then I think that was, like, mirrored so oddly by that other anchor who by the end is like reading the dictionary, just like, just such, it was like, that was just,
yeah, I forgot insanely, about that.
That's like insanely silly.
The girl, Goldblum, right?
Yeah.
The yeah.
Yeah. Oh God. Jeff, was that Jeff Goldblum?
Face blindness.
Yes. Right? Yeah. Face blindness.
I thought it was.
It was clearly Jeff Goldblum.
I thought it was Ray Romano.
No, you didn't, Mia.
I actually.
But no, his glasses. He had the glasses. And he talked.
I thought that was Ray Romano.
I'm broken. Jeff Goldblum, though, I do think has really grown into his looks, hasn't it? Like, I feel like silver looks really well on him. And to be fair to you, Mia, in my head, when I think Jeff Goldblum, probably because the era we grew up in, like, I think Jeff Goldblum with gray hair. So I could see how maybe you would think Ray Romano.
Yeah.
I'm worried for Mia.
I'm worried for me too. I know. I was like, I either know like young Jeff Goldblum of Jurassic Park or Silver Fox Jeff Goldblum. And I was like,
in between.
I literally was like, oh, this is like when Ray Romano must have been like really skinny.
You thought that?
The thing is, he wasn't just in one scene. Like, you had to think consistently multiple times that was Ray Romano. Yeah.
What's wrong with me? Oh my God.
Like, you guys look up Ray Romano, it's kind of believable. I'm looking at him now and he looks a little like that Jeff Goldblum like from Morning Glory. Yeah.
He does.
And they sort of talk the same. Okay, he looks a lot like Jeff Goldblum looks in this movie.
He does. Allie's unhinged.
I'm unhinged.
Jeff Goldblum is such a distinct character in the way that he talks, with his cadence, with his glasses, with his face, and just like a very unique, distinct look. And Ray Romano talks like Ray Romano. And so just like they're just both very distinct people. I would get like a Matt Damon, you know, Mark Wahlberg. They're both like bland, you know, potato men, but these are like very distinct men with rich personalities.
It's amazing the conversations I was having in my head about it at the time. For it to turn out to be Jeff Goldblum, I was like, wow, that's an easier solution than what my brain came up with. Okay. Well, on that absolutely unhinged note, it's time to count up all the tropes we saw in this rom-com. We like to finish up these movie discussions by counting up the familiar tropes we saw. I will kick us off. Sorry, I have to write. calm down.
Oh my god, literally bawling that she got Ray Romano and Jeff Goldblum.
I cannot come down. Okay, so we have the neurotic lady professional, sort of like a Sally Albright type figure, sort of like Michelle Pfeiffer, One Fine Day. They're like a professional, yeah. But they're like, oh my god, I have to talk a million miles a minute and verbally process everything, which I identify with, but you know. And then our lead works in journalism. We have a coworker obsessed with her love life. That was the non-ambitious coworker. I think she had a pretty big apartment, a huge ass apartment at one point.
She did.
Right? Yeah, I thought that was quite large. There was a let me tell you who you are speech where Harrison Ford was like, let me guess, every date you have is terrible because you stop talking about your job. And I'm just like, yep. A million, if I had a penny for every time I've heard that speech. I love that speech. Cut to the morning after sex, but it was cut to the early morning when she was watching the news. Unfortunate tropes. This is a sort of like a particularly straight and white rom-com, which is like an issue in the genre that is dissipating. But at this time, yeah, very, very, yeah, white.
Very
film.
White.
In
2010.
Yeah, I was just like, man, interesting.
Yeah, that's actually so true. The only person of color was the cutaway to an interview with Condoleezza Rice, right?
Yeah.
That was shocking to see.
It was like, yeah, it felt like the lack of diversity in this movie was like a bit, it was like shocking. You were like, wow, literally every character, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
And then there's a crosstown chase, but she's going to chase back Harrison Ford. But also, I think after Sarah's cracked the case, her true love journalism show, dream job.
It's a great chase, too, because she's wearing this like beautiful dress and it's all shot in slow motion. And honestly, New York City looks fucking hot in that crosstown chase. Speaking of like another trip, New York City is a magical place. Like those pigeons, I was like, wow, how romantic.
It was stunning. It was like, yeah, it was like probably like top crosstown chase scenes. Because normally they speed through it, obviously. Yeah. So that was beautiful. And then last night, I have a montage of the good times where they're sort of cutting. Oh my god, it's so Siri, you're so right. It's just cutting between her and her job and the good moments.
Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, we cracked.
Wow, absolutely cracked. You're the host. I give up. Allie, what did you have?
I have that she's a klutzy woman who falls down a lot. Always falls. There's always wind in her face. She's like, you know, like papers are everywhere.
Yeah.
She's like on a bike and she like rides her bike into a bunch of men fishing. And it's like, like tripping, falling, forgetting that she's not wearing pants. I have a meet cute in the elevator. Oh, she meets her work husband and her, love interest in the elevator. And he's like, don't you know how to push the buttons? a classic nag. Women love to be nagged.
Oh, we love it.
We love it.
How do buttons work?
I have enemies to lovers.
Yes.
Specifically more with like Diane Keaton's character and like Harrison Ford's character. They're like enemies and then they're lovers.
Yeah.
And I'll say that like Rachel McAdams and Harrison Ford were like enemies to friends. I have that Harrison Ford's grand gesture was cooking eggs for her, cooking his frittata.
Yeah. Oh my god.
I loved that moment really got me. I was like, he's gonna cook the eggs.
He's gonna
cook the eggs for her. Walked out of the big interview. She gets this big interview for her dream job and she walks out of it. I have skinny woman eats huge slice of pizza.
Right.
Absolutely. Thin, eating like she's on a football team. What else? Oh, I have the friends get together, both Diane Keaton and Harrison Ford. They get together, everybody gets together. Everybody gets love.
And she even brings her friend along, which I thought was a beautiful detail. When she like gives her friend a t-shirt and says, welcome to
Staples. Who is that? How did you recognize that character?
only recognize Jeff Goldblum. Okay.
I mean, I'm looking at literally Ray Romano's face right now on my computer screen and being like, I cannot picture Jeff Goldblum in that role. I did a t-shirt. She gave her a t-shirt, so it just sort of seemed like it was the character from the beginning. But you know what? My face blindness is very specific.
Yeah.
I don't know why I wrote bangs. I just feel like
I think if they're blowing the bangs out of their face, I do feel like that's very rom-com-y.
Yeah, like
what other genre is that a staple in?
Yeah.
Truly.
Like you don't see like a woman blowing bangs out of her face in a Civil War movie.
Yeah. Not in a horror movie.
Not in Bridgerton.
Not in a sort of cheating drama, you know? It's just not happening. So
you never see a Bond girl blow bangs out of her face.
I've never seen it, and I have watched a lot of Bond films. So
yeah.
I've been waiting for it.
And then this isn't a trope. This is just another point to kind of the strange tone of this rom-com where sometimes it's very, very silly. The name of the network that Rachel McAdams works at is IBS.
Oh, my God. I know.
Irritable bowel syndrome.
It's so silly. It's so silly.
I wonder if that, do you think that like at any point in the production of this movie, somebody called that out, or do you think it was really purposeful?
It had to be purposeful.
No way.
You see IBS and how could you not? They could have named it anything.
But don't
they
could you have think IBS really like became a part of the zeitgeist in the last like 5 years? Like we've all had it for our whole life. Oh, I guess I'm sharing too much, but I just mean, you know, it feels like a thing that like we've named more recently. No?
That's interesting. I would say maybe 8 years. I would give it like an 8 year window and where it's 2021. This movie's 11 years ago. So I could see there being a window.
Yeah.
It feels like there was like there was like a pre IBS culture where it was like the Beano commercials. And then you know, I think that was at a time where it was like, ha ha, gas is funny. And then
I remember those Beano commercials.
There'll be no more gas.
remember Jamie Lee Curtis's Activia commercials?
Oh my gosh.
What a true,
just like
burned into my memory.
But maybe Eileen Brush McKenna was before her time. Who knows?
She definitely is.
Yeah.
Sarah, do you have any tropes that we missed?
Well, really, you know, I was going to say the meet cute. I was so excited to share it. I was like, nobody saw the meet cute in the elevator. No one was going to call it out but me. But Allie called it out. The one other thing I would say that's like very tropey is the whole like too busy for love thing, you know, like when she's definitely not even thinking about anything romantic, and then this thing happens, like to the point where the guy, like, it's like so beaten over the head where the senior producer, she's like at his house working and he's like, so you got a boyfriend? And she's like, me? And he's like, a husband? She's like, me? Like, she's like, no. It's like so strange. She's not like, no, I don't now. I'm like really busy. She just like giggles and like keeps shuffling papers and goes, are you talking? They're the only two there. And she keeps going, are you talking to me? It's like so uncomfortable. Then he's also there when the guy asks her out and she goes, that couldn't have been a date. Like, so it was just like very much the whole like girl obsessed with her work has never thought about love until this very moment kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. Which it's like, I where had to have Rachel McAdams, you know, that even makes it harder, I think.
Right. Exactly.
Like, Rachel McAdams just the most beautiful person.
Yeah. You're like, there is no way. Like, and I feel like they tried very hard to sort of like make her appearance relatable to sort of you know
those shoes really they were like she wears the craziest looking pumps the whole movie.
But she really remained through all of her bang trauma and all of her like workaholic tendencies just like intangibly stunning, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, of
course. She is, yeah,
of course.
Okay, it's like really embarrassing that I like constantly, this might be like a Jeff Goldblum moment for me, but it's honestly very embarrassing how frequently I forget Patrick Wilson's name. I keep just always going, that guy.
I had no idea what his name was, if it makes you feel better.
What obviously is Patrick Wilson in? Because I feel that I've seen Patrick Wilson in movies and never thought twice about him being handsome, but somehow in this movie, I was like, this is my dream. Like, he's so chill and so nice. And like,
right.
So I was just like, we all need to be with someone like like him.
Oh, he's in the Conjuring movies.
Yeah, that was it. He's in horror, him. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, he's usually like a horror guy. And he was in Aquaman.
Oh, he was in Fargo.
Was he?
He's in Fargo, yeah, the Nun, La Llorona. The Nun,
he's really into horror.
Okay. He was in La Llorona.
Yeah.
I definitely developed a crush on him, though, in this movie. I did really like him because he demanded nothing.
Yeah, he demanded nothing. Anytime she's like, I'm too much, he's like, no, you're fine.
Yeah, exactly. Literally, like, I thought that moment where they were eating the Thai food, I think it was, like, I thought he was going to have, she was talking about work a bunch, and I thought he was going to have his big episode and, basically speech about, like, hey, you know, I don't know how we're going to do this if you're so obsessed with work. It's like, this isn't working for me. And then she was the one who got up and was like, you looked at me weird. I'm sick of apologizing for my job. Goodbye. And he was just like, wait, where are you going? You know?
Yeah. Like, really, I was just wondering what you were thinking.
Exactly. I missed him. It was honestly, it was very, I had a good time watching this movie. I like the whole time was like laughing sometimes at it, sometimes with it. But I feel that overall, like it was, it like left me with very little anxiety, which is very rare, I think, for a movie viewing experience, you know?
Yeah, it was definitely like a lovely little escape. And yeah, I was just laughing the whole time and not challenged at all.
Yeah, it was sort of like a turn your brain off and watch kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Exactly. Okay, well, that takes us to 20 tropes, which, wow. Yeah, I would say for like an Aline Brosh McKenna rom-com, that's what we come to know and expect and respect, is that sort of a high amount of tropes.
All right, time to rate this rom-com, you guys. As of now, here are our top five rom-coms. We have When Harry Met Sally, 10 Things I Hate About You, The Best Man, Hitch, and Love and Basketball. Now, if we so choose today, we can put Morning Glory on that list, but we have to unanimously agree to vote off one of those other top five to replace it with. So what do we think? Does Morning Glory deserve a spot on the top five list? And if so, who should it knock off?
I think that you should absolutely not knock off any of those five. Listen, it was fun. We turned the whole off. It was great. All of that was all good. It's... Come on. I mean, I think the five that you said are great. I think Morning Glory for me, here are my initial thoughts. I think it was a good watch, a fun watch. I didn't have a bad time. I wasn't like, oh no, I wasted 2 hours of my life. It was good. I think it had some like strange story, you know, things that we discussed. I think it left me, I definitely kind of was a little weepy when Harrison Ford was making eggs. So it definitely did affect me, but I wasn't like, you know, it didn't take me through an emotional roller coaster, which I do think is actually kind of rewarding by the end. I want to feel a little nervous. I want there to be like a little bit more stakes, I think. And then I want to feel like that really feels so much sweeter. So I think it lacked a little bit of that. And I also think, as far as the actual love story goes, it was actually quite a well-adjusted adult love. I think I craved a little bit of... them having to work for it a little more, even though we did identify the love story is within her job. So I think overall cool that it's like a little deviation from the genre and that like the romance is with her work, and fun that, you know, we didn't see a ton of romantic drama, but I think I don't necessarily think my opinion would be to knock any of them off given the flaws that we identified.
Yeah. I agree with you, Sarah. I think that this movie was like so fun to watch, but yeah, for me it was lacking that rom in the rom-com. Just because of its unique structure and the fact that it's, you know, more about her love of her job than it is you know, her love with Patrick Wilson. And for me, I'm all about the rom and rom-coms, and I want kind of the main conflict to either come from the romance or like the two romantic leads are fighting the conflict together. But this was more like, she, you know, Becky had her own conflict that she was dealing with. And then her B story was that she also found a perfect man. Good for you, Becky. but yeah, that's those are my thoughts. Mia?
Yeah, no, I fully agree with what's been said. Yes, where I'm like, this was sort of like a nice, easy drinking, like Chardonnay rom-com. Absolutely, absolutely lovely. But yes, I don't think has the grit to sort of knock out any of the ones in the top five. And I agree. I would, even though we agree that the romance was with the job, I would have liked a little more tension, and a little more, yes, a little more, of the classic like romance. You know, I like a 50-50 rom to com split. And I feel like this was like, yeah, there just wasn't enough rom in it to support it. So yeah. So with that decided, I think now it's time for reality check. In this segment, we test out the tropes and plot devices in the rom-coms we just watched and see if they hold up in the real world. In this film, we see the trope of walking out of a big presentation or interview. So yes, we see this in other rom-coms like Hitch and 27 Dresses, which turns down the promotion. Now, is this something we do in real life? Have any of us ever walked out of the big presentation or interview? Sarah, Allie, have you?
I'm so lame. No, I love, I cower in the face of authority. I've never walked out. Oh man, I wish I had some like really kind of like just heroic story to tell about doing that. No, I usually will like suffer through anything, in that category that I'm uncomfortable with and then go to my car and cry. So no, not me. No. I have not, I do the presentations. How about you, Allie?
I am also a coward. I mean, in job interviews, I show up, you know, usually like an hour to 30 minutes early to any kind of like interview presentation thing. Even like auditions, I've never walked out of an audition because sometimes when you're auditioning in LA pre-pandemic, you'll have to like wait sometimes like hours for just like a quick audition because like casting directors are taking long. Right. And sometimes I've seen other actors walk out being like, I don't have time for this. I have better things to do. And I've always been like, I will be late to my job. I will be late to my job. I will get that parking ticket. I will not walk out of this opportunity. Please, please. Give me this opportunity. Yeah.
No, I'm 1,000% the same way. I've been in those auditions where people are like even like 3 hours. This is ridiculous. Like I'm leaving. I'm just like, well, one more space for me to keep waiting. Just bumped up a little. No, I also have terrified of authority, especially when it comes to jobs. And I have never walked out of an interview or big presentation. The one, the closest I've come, which is not close at all, is one of like the first day jobs I was toying with when I moved to LA, was like someone, they were opening like a True Food kitchen in West Hollywood, which is like a healthy fast food place. And the manager was like really intense. And I sort of was like, do I want this job? But she was like very pushy. So I was like, yeah, I'll take this job. And then like the next morning I had a call from her and I was like, I'm not going to answer that. And then like, she like texted me and then, was like, if you work for me, I need you to be available to me at all times. And I was just like, no, so I just ghosted her. I was like, no, I'm not. That doesn't seem right for a restaurant job that I should have to answer my phone to you all the time.
What was your role though? Like CEO of the restaurant? I don't understand.
No, I think it was for like a cashier. Like,
why would she be texting you about off the clock?
I don't know. It was weird. I think it was because they were opening. So it's like, but still, the idea that it's like, yeah, your restaurant manager, you have to answer your phone to them all the time. I was like, I don't think that's how restaurant jobs work. In fact, they don't. Yeah, so I didn't walk out, but I just was like, I'm just never going to return her call.
yeah, that's great. So
that's the closest I've come, which is not close at all. So it seems like reality does not check out, or that it's only saved for sort of like big, big, big moments. okay, well, you guys know I hate to say it. That is the end of the podcast. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today.
You guys, it was so fun. You're so cool.
Oh my god!
No, you're cool.
You're cool.
No, we're no.
I know how we liked that compliment because you know, I think there's a lot of compliments to give both of you, and I think that like Allie specifically has probably received a lot, but I feel that like maybe like cool is something that like I don't know, like maybe you get a lot, maybe you don't, but like it seemed to me that you were craving, and it's something that I feel I really feel about you. I think you are so. I think both of you are like. So cool. You're really cool wow. people. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank
yeah.
You. Thank you. I do crave that compliment.
Same.
Same. And I rarely get it. My family thinks I'm cool, but that's it. So I love it.
Mia. No, Mia, you're really cool. I've always wow. thought that about you.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you. Wow. This is really nice. Okay.
Fun, guys. This was so cool.
Well, and Sarah, do you have any social media things to promote or important romance advice for our listeners?
Oh my God. Oh shit. I'm literally the worst person to ask, guys. Do everything I don't do. I mean, I do. Don't do anything I do. That whole part out, I think. No, let me think. Social media. I have nothing on social media necessarily to promote. Feel free to follow me if you want to connect or, you know, have a husband for me. And if, yeah, I my handle is fittingly Sarah Let's Date. And so, yeah, feel free to follow me. I'm private, but I will accept anybody. So, just go ahead and follow. And then as far as romantic advice, I don't know, guys, honestly, I'm in the position to take some. For me, I would say like, follow your heart. But honestly, if it's getting you nowhere, maybe don't, you know what I mean? Like, maybe follow the advice of somebody who's succeeded. So I would say, yeah, that's it. That's as far as the advice goes for me. But if you two have any for me, not to flip the script too much, I'd love to hear that.
Oh,
romance advice?
Yeah.
Oh.
Feeling a little same boat over here.
Yeah.
In terms of advice.
This Allie? I guess like the advice that I try to continue to give myself and sometimes I take it and sometimes I really don't is just try to like have fun with dating and not take it so seriously. I don't know what happened, but recently I'm just like taking everything so seriously. It's like, no, it's supposed to be fun, but there's something deeply stressful about trying to connect with people and failing constantly and being like, am I just like just impossible to understand? I don't know.
I think the pandemic exacerbates that a little bit, where it's like I've forgotten how to like move through like conversation. You know what I mean? Like I forgot totally. How to be a person.
Well, and landmines everywhere, you know?
Everywhere.
It's like, oh, what's been going on? It's like nothing good. You know?
Nothing good.
Exactly. Nothing at all very good.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, that's so true. Well, that's great, guys.
Did you like our advice?
I love that all of our advice turned into damn, yeah, it's just hard.
It's hard. Oh wait, Sarah, didn't you say a little bit earlier off air that you have a fun show coming up?
Oh yeah, plug-ini. Okay, yes. Please, everybody who's listening, every single mortal and immortal who is tuning in, creature of every kind, come to the Hopeful Dads variety show. That's my comedy duo, two women comedy show. We have in the past done and toured this two woman hour long variety show, and then my comedy partner ended up on Broadway for 2 years, and then the pandemic happened, and then she lost her job, and so here we are. We're finally bringing it back after a couple years. We're super excited. It's going to be on October 15th at 10 p.m. at Dynasty Typewriter. Really exciting. There will be guests as well, which we've never done in our show. So to keep the variety spirit alive. So definitely come on by. It's an hour of sketch, song, dance, stand up. I like actually made up dance. maybe we'll move our bodies a bit. Stand up, characters, vignettes. It's a really fun time. It's very like warm, fun, on your feet sometimes energy. I think people would have a good time if they showed up. So I really implore you, to head on out. I will actually, so do follow me. I mean, you can also go to Dynasty's website probably in like a week
and
find the show ticket on 1015, or follow me at the handle that I mentioned, and I will post the link in my bio very soon.
And we'll also post about it on our Insta as well. Yes. You guys, the show is so fun. I've seen both Nina and Sarah perform before in their duo show, and it was simply incredible. And the energy in the room, it was like a party. I'd never seen a comedy show like that where like people were jumping out of their chairs. I was like, it was like sold out, and I was in the balcony, and I remember people literally like jumping up to laugh. It was incredible. And so I'm going to be there. I'm so excited.
Thanks, Al. That's very nice. Very, very kind praise. Hopefully it's just as fun, this time. Definitely roll through, everyone. And maybe afterwards, if you like had a crush on me or whatever, we can talk in the lobby. I'm shy.
I'm the shy girl. You guys, thank you for listening to the podcast. Sarah, thank you for being on. We have a new episode out every week, and please remember to subscribe. And if you ever feel like performing a grand gesture to Mia or myself, the most romantic thing that you can do is leave us a rating and review, please. Yes. That would be
so incredible.
And
do a crosstown chase over to the app store and write us a nice little review. Oh boy, that would just really mean a lot.
Yeah, I love reading them and then reading them to Mia over the phone.
Because I can't read.
Mia gets a little nervous. But you guys, our podcast is brought to you by the lovely people at Campfire Media. Thank you, Campfire Media.
Thank you, Campfire. Oh, and P.S. I love rom-coms.
I love rom-coms.
I love rom-coms.
This is Patrick.
And this is Mark, co-host of Nintendo Cartridge Society.
Every Tuesday and Thursday, we're your home for all things Nintendo.
On Tuesday, we're talking about the latest Nintendo news.
And on Thursday, we're doing deep dives into specific corners of the Nintendo universe.
Ranking the Koopa Kids.
Determining who the best Smash Fighter is.
That's Nintendo Cartridge Society on Campfire Media or wherever you get your podcasts.
Campfire.